it really comes down to creating this space where it's not dangerous to say something and be wrong.
How do companies create a culture and core values that employees actually live out? The team at The Receptionist, a Denver-based software company, sets out to answer that very question. Welcome to The Fabric. Here's your host, Michael Ashford.
Our guest in this episode of The Fabric is Peter Schroeder, the founder of telecommunications company Telxio and an entrepreneur who, not unlike our CEO here at The Receptionist, Andy Alsop, is driven to build a company where success is measured in many different ways beyond just the financials. Now, our why here at The Receptionist is to build a company that operates with compassion, lives with integrity, and fosters strong human connections. And our just cause is to build a world where a company's profits fuel the mission to be in service to its employees and the community. And if you want to hear more on our just cause, go back and listen to episode 81 here of the show. But in this conversation, Peter and I discuss his belief that builds off of that, that while financially successful companies are good and the goal, obviously, it shouldn't come at the expense of employees' ability to be bold in how they approach their jobs, nor should it sacrifice a commitment to setting healthy boundaries. And above all, Peter believes successful companies admit they are nothing but a collection of human beings. And sometimes those human beings make mistakes, as you'll hear Peter discuss pretty candidly. If you're interested in learning more about what we do and how company culture drives us here at The Receptionist, consider subscribing to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheReceptionistApp. We're currently releasing new episodes of The Fabric once a month, along with lots of other great content. And now, here's my interview with Peter Schroeder. In my research for our conversation here today, I heard you say something to the effect of, and I'm paraphrasing here as I look at my notes, company success is a blend of factors beyond financial success.
Uh-huh.
And I know the company you've built here at The Receptionist, we are very similar in that up to this point. We're bootstrapped companies. I'm curious your take on that. What other determining factors do you look at as an entrepreneur, as a founder, that determine company success that extend beyond financial?
Well, I mean, I think anything else than financial, really. I'm not by any means driven by money. I've never have been. Money's great. Don't get me wrong. I love having money and all that. You know, it makes things easier and more fun in certain ways. But it's never been my goal to make $1 billion and that be that. It's really more just the journey and having fun with what I do, and just enjoying being able to play with the things I find interesting. So for me, that's really the main goal. And that of course rubs off, on the entire company and our staff and, everyone that's on board here is really just, you know, doing this because they love doing what they do and have the opportunity to play with some things that they find interesting. So I try to give my team that, and that's really the main thing.
What are you looking at then, beyond financial success? What are those things that keep people happy? Are there measurements that you're looking at there at Telxio that tell you we're running a successful company here if it's not all determined on finances?
I think the main thing is allowing people to do, what they feel is right. So with that, I mean, you might have some employees and team members that come to you with some kind of project or solution to something that they feel is right and that you know, and I quote no, because you might not know, but you think you know that it's going to fail whatever they, whatever it is that they want to do or how they want to do it. But you should allow them to do that anyways in their way, because when you do that, then you basically have some team members, even if they fail, that put everything that they have into what you're building. So you have a team that really just don't just go to a job and they don't just, you know, show up and work and clock out at 5 p.m. sharp. You have some that are engaged in what you do and can get on board with the entire mission. And then what you can create is a company that is more about product and more about having happy customers and more about creating something greater than just, you know, a bit of money on the treasure chest. It's really about, you know, creating something that people love and that they're that they like telling other people about, you know. So that's how we've built our company. We've never spent a dollar on advertising, for example. It's really just about building a great product that our customers love. And the only way we can do that is by, having engaged employees and a team that just wants to build that.
Is it fair to characterize what you just said as finding ways to give ownership to the team, not like literal mm-hmm. ownership in the company? And certainly that can be the case, of course, mm-hmm. but is it ownership?
It's ownership, yeah, for sure. And it goes down to everything. It goes down to the first line support technician. You know, let them do it the way. Of course, there are, you know, different ways we do certain things in the company. It's not like everyone just running around doing their own thing. But if you allow them to, take ownership and take pride in what they do and give them the ability to do that or the option even to do that, then yeah, you get some really good stuff.
Okay, I'm the marketing director here. So mm-hmm. I gotta ask what you just said or in your previous answer, no marketing spend. And you've built a sizable company there, Peter. How in the heck did you do it?
Well, so I didn't say no marketing spend. I said no advertising dollars.
Advertising dollars. Okay. Yes. Thank you for the clarification. The question still stands.
Yeah. We never paid for ads. It really is not that we didn't want to. We just couldn't. We are a bootstrap company and we are in an industry where, you know, our competitors are AT&T, Verizon, RingCentral, really, really, really big multinational companies with billions of dollars to spend on ads. And we can't compete on that. If we were to go out and buy ads on Google, for example, it's $700 per click for the keywords that we need to be on. And the math adds up. A customer stays for an average of 7 years and spends so and so much per month. So yeah, sure, you could do that. You can buy your customers that way. But we didn't have funding. We didn't have any, significant investors that put in $200 million from the beginning. So we had to figure out, what do we do then? How do we get those customers without advertising, right? And for us, it was really about SEO. It was about, okay, we can try and get to those, first page on Google for those keywords organically, because that's the only option we have. We can't do cold calling. We can't do cold emailing because, no one wants to buy a phone system. It's not like something you wake up one morning. Oh my God, I'm looking forward to changing my phone system in my company. It's not a sexy thing. So you can't call someone and say, hey, do you want to buy a phone system? It's like saying, hey, do you want to buy a house? No, you got to be in front of people when they're looking for it and when they need to change it. And the only way we can really do that effectively is to be there on Google when people search for it. So we have to just get really good at SEO.
There's, of course, the tactic of getting really good at SEO and creating content that can get you there. And that's a long tail form. Mm. But I'm curious, what did not focusing on, like you phrased it, buying customers, mm-hmm. doing advertising, paying $700 a click on Google Ads, what did that allow you and your team to focus on that perhaps had you had a bunch of funding and were able to go buy those customers off of Google ad clicks? What did that allow you to focus on with you and your team?
I would actually say, what did it force us to focus on?
Okay, great. Yeah, go there.
We were forced to make sure that the customers we did get stayed, right? So it really boils down to that. That means building a product that is so good that they don't want to leave, that they can't leave. There's no option that's better than us. That's really what it gets down to. Because once we got those customers, we had to make sure that they stay, we couldn't afford to lose them. And then what comes with that, when you build a kick-ass product, when you build something that people want to brag about having, then you get more customers that way as well, because they do start bragging about having it and telling their friends and family about it. And they start signing up with their businesses. And all of a sudden they start writing reviews, all these different things that come with it. So what it really boils down to is having some good employees that can build a product and wants to build a product that customers want to brag about. Because when you have that, then you get, one thing is you retain the customers that you do get, but you also get more that way. And then you start getting more reviews, right? And then it's kind of snowballing, right? So then all of a sudden people start finding you with good SEO online, and then they start reading the reviews and they start signing up. So it's taken 10 years to get there, but all of a sudden it starts running faster and faster.
It's very similar to our own growth trajectory here at The Receptionist as a bootstrap company, and yeah, relying on those customer reviews, that word of mouth. they A, convert more, and said, B, they stay longer. I'm curious, for a system like the phones, where you're probably not thinking about it too much unless it's not doing what it's supposed to be doing, how do you create something that people go out and brag about? What did you specifically do, Peter, within the product or within your customer support to make sure that this was not just a, hey, set it and forget it thing for people, but this was a, I'm going to go tell Joe or Jane at the next company, you've got to switch to the system.
Well, first of all, you need to make sure it's stable so that it doesn't go down like our competitors do. So you take away some pain points. We haven't been down since 2016. Not a minute.
Incredible.
Right?
Wow.
And our competitors brag about having 99.999% uptime, but that adds up to, I think it's 8 hours a year. That's terrible. Like, who wants their phone system to be down for 8 hours? Maybe not continuously, but it's a pain point that we take away right there, right? That's one thing. But then you also have to have something that others don't. And it's almost, something that kind of just happened because we had to again. If we go back to when we started 10 years ago, we didn't have funding. So I basically did technical support and sales for the first 3 years of the company until we could afford hiring someone there or prioritized hiring someone there instead of, you know, for example, a salesperson or another developer. And that allowed me to understand what the customers really wanted without them even telling me. One thing is that you get people coming in and they ask for certain features and do you have that? Yes, yes, and yes. But you also ask them about what is it that you, why do you need that feature? How do you use it and stuff like that? It just comes up naturally. And when you learn that, then at least for me, I can't stop thinking about how do I solve these things that the customers don't even know that they need solving. So it kind of happens completely or naturally that we invented new features that, of course, with time, your competitors start copying. But we had features first that no one else had, and we keep doing that. And by having that, then people want to brag about it because, hey, we have something that other people don't, and it's so smart, and it does this and this and this. And it really comes down to, hey, we had to do that because we have to talk to our customers. And I think it's something everyone should do. Every CEO should be on first line support at least one day a year or something like that.
Absolutely. Our CEO, Andy, he did very much the same thing you did for the first nice. Several years. I think it was probably closer to 4 or 5 years. He was regularly in support answering. He was sales for a while. He was regularly supporting our customers. And it does. It makes a difference. And a lot of that led to what we call radical support here at The Receptionist. It's actually a phrase we've trademarked, just going that next level or two deeper in terms of supporting your customer base to make sure that they're happy and taken care of. Curious, what effect, Peter, then does that have on your staff? You've talked about, hey, if they bring an idea and you're not all about it, but you go and let them do it anyway. If they see you as the founder and CEO of the company answering support chats or support calls, getting in there and helping close a deal, what does that do to for and with your staff?
Well, it's makes them relate to you and allows them to you know, it removes some distance. Let me say it like that. It allows them to understand that they can come to you with anything really, and that their suggestions are appreciated, and that I've been in their shoes before, so I understand what they're going through. And the same thing with the rest of the leadership team. Really, it's this distance that you need to kind of somehow remove so that you have a team that don't think that it's wrong for me to transfer a call to him or write to him on Slack or come, you know, bring some kind of idea, because everyone has good ideas and everyone, you know, talks to customers and in some kind of way or has some kind of engagement with the end user, at least should have. And that means that everyone has something to bring to the table. And you know, I'm not saying that everyone comes with the amazing idea, but it sparks creativity, right? It sparks some kind spark that can grow to a flame. And you know, you all of a sudden you have a new feature or you have a new product or whatever you have, but it doesn't come from nothing. And especially when you're a leader and you're CEO or you're running a company, that can be really hard to, you know, get after you built the first version of the product. Then all of a sudden you don't have that direct communication with your customers and your users, that it really requires for you to understand what it is that the user wants. So you need to rely on getting that from someone else. And that is the team that talks to them. And if they don't think that they can bring anything to you, well, then you're screwed, because, you know, how are you really going to get that valuable info from them? And typically founders are very creative people that, you know, can invent thing and that have these ideas, but it doesn't come from nothing. You have to have some kind of, ignition, for this to happen.
I love that. It doesn't come from nothing. Mm-hmm. So often it probably is like portrayed like that, perhaps on social media, that it's just, oh, this idea struck me. I love how you framed that there, Peter. Let's go a little bit deeper there. I heard you say on another interview that you advocate for and encourage your team to tell you when mm-hmm. you're wrong, to speak up and say, no, I think you're wrong, even as the leader of this company. Easy to say.
Yeah.
How do you create the psychological safety to make it possible, Peter?
Yeah, it is easy to say, and it's not something that takes time to foster that culture. Definitely. I think it comes down to creating a space where it's okay to post inappropriate memes on Slack. That's what I found out.
Well, you're getting people in trouble here now, Peter.
Yeah, I know. We fired HR. No, it really comes down to creating this space where it's not dangerous to say something and be wrong. And if you can create that culture, then you all of a sudden also create a little bit less distance, or remove some distance between you and the rest of the team. I actually think one of the books I read recently that I really like, and it's because it's really speaks to this whole concept, and it very much like us, is No Rules Rule. It's about Netflix's culture, and it's very much like this. It's about, you know, setting an example at yourself, not creating a distance, and also remembering, for example, to take vacation, take days off, because you, as a leader, especially as a founder, tend to just work your butt off and 24/7 and never go on vacation. But that sets an example for the rest of the team, saying it's not okay to take vacation. It's not okay to do certain things. And you know, when you are not setting that example for your team, then who should? Right. So it very much comes back. It circles back to this whole thing about creating a culture where it's okay to do certain things, and posting inappropriate memes is what it's all about, I think.
So I think you made some people probably cringe there. I know. Mm-hmm. I felt a little bit of like, I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah.
So what do you do if you cross the line? Because I don't know that you can always know whose line, like where each individual's line is of what mm-hmm. is or is not inappropriate. There's no like hard and fast black and white definition of what is inappropriate, Peter. What do you do if you do cross that line then?
If I cross the line, I rely on my team telling me, and I've done it a couple of times, and someone tells me directly, hey, that was, you didn't think about this. This was too inappropriate. And luckily I have some team members that been with me for a long time that are not only telling me when I'm wrong, but also telling me when I'm very wrong, and actually, you know, hurt a company or hurt someone's feelings. I've done that once or twice, and I'm definitely not proud of it. But I think in general, most people understand where that line goes, where the border is, how you don't step over. There's certain things like, yeah, if you post about race, well, then you only post about your own race, right? There are certain very easy rules of thumb that you can follow. Things like if you post about religion, don't do that. There's certain things that, you know, people take to heart more than you probably would yourself. So there are certain things you don't do. But I think in most cases, there's an understanding of what's funny and what's not.
I appreciate I didn't expect that we would go here. So I appreciate just the candor in that answer. I don't know. I think a lot of people would have sugarcoated that. Yeah. And so again, I appreciate you being willing to bear it all there. So.
Well, it is all about candor. Like that is really what it boils down to. Everything is about candor. It's about allowing candor in general in within your team, and not being mad if someone says something against you, but take it to heart and actually say, hey, yeah, thank you. I don't agree with you, but thank you for telling me this that I'm wrong. And of course, I can say, well, that's not, I'm definitely right, and you think you're right. But at least, someone told you, and then you start thinking about, oh, maybe I wasn't right, or maybe that person was wrong. Who knows? But creating that candor where people feel it's okay to speak up.
Have you ever lost an employee over something like this?
Not something like this, no. Not something like this. I think actually, if anything, that's what people appreciate with our team, within our team. It's having that candor and being able to speak up, because you feel respected. You feel like you're worth something. You feel like your opinion matters, and that's what you want.
I want to go back to what we, I guess, started this conversation with as we begin to kind of wrap things up here, Peter. Being a bootstrapped company.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked a little bit about how you grew through marketing or no advertising and word of mouth and SEO. We just wrapped up kind of a conversation there about psychological safety and candor.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine a world where things would be different or how things would be different if you were funded?
Yeah, definitely. In many ways, I'm happy that we're not. I thought that we were supposed to take funding when we started the company. Like, the only thing you hear about is tech companies. They need to raise $200 million and go public, right? That's all you hear about. But we couldn't because, well, first of all, we're in an industry where we are up against some very, very big players, and who's going to fund a company that's going to go against them? That's nuts. Probably was nuts when you think about it that way. But the other thing was, I started the company with my wife that I had just started dating, and who's going to invest in a couple that's just met? So we didn't have an option, and I'm really, really happy that we didn't, because today we are allowed to do these things. If we were funded, there were probably a lot of more HR involved than there is today, and there was probably a lot more rules, and there's definitely someone that told us how to run the company and how to do certain things and how to build the product and what to focus on. We don't have that today. We can literally do what we think is right for the customer. And I think that is incredibly important. And it's something that people just don't hear about. That story is not something that's told. It's not the sexy story, right? It's not the Silicon Valley model. But right. It's definitely a model, and it's definitely a path that you can take. It takes longer. And that is what it is. But we also own 100% of the company, and we can do whatever we want. And the day we sell the company, we get a lot more. So I'm happy we didn't.
You mentioned very early on in this conversation, money's nice. Money's a good thing. But that's not why you're doing it.
Oh, yeah.
Why are you doing this? Why are you doing what you're doing if it's not to... Why are you an entrepreneur if it's not to go out and just create as big of a business, as much of a financial money-making machine as you possibly can?
Well, so that's really because I like doing what I think is fun. I like playing with things. I like discovering things, and I'm utterly unemployable. So, taking funding again is probably a really bad thing for me, because then you all of a sudden have a boss. Why am I doing it? It's really just because it allows me to do what I think is fun and go to work every day and be excited about it and have something new to build. And I'm in an industry right now that allows me to do that, because there's always something new coming from the side. That's just, oh, now we built this, so we go that direction. Or now there's AI, now we got to do that, There's always something new. And that keeps it exciting for me. The day it stops being exciting, I'm probably going to sell the company and start doing something else. I need to, at some point, own a hot dog stand. That's on my bucket list. So, I have stuff to do. but again, that's not about making a lot of money. It's about something else. It's about doing something that I think is fun and interesting and excites me. And that's worth so much more to me.
Why hot dogs? I got to know. Why a hot dog stand?
I think it's probably the same reason why I was a DJ. It was not about fame or anything like that. It's about making people happy and stand there and watch people have a good time. And that's what hot dogs do in some weird way.
As long as you don't think about what they're made out of, I think you're good there.
Right, exactly. But it's really that, yeah. The same thing I get when I invite people over for dinner at my house, right? It's this the opportunity to give people a good time for a moment.
It's a connection thing.
It
sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Peter, last question for you here as we wrap things up. This is The Fabric, and Fabric stands for our core values here at The Receptionist of fun, authentic, bold, respectful, innovative, and collaborative. Which one of those resonates with you the most and why?
Can I share just all of them?
But that would be cheating, so you got to pick one.
Fun. I think is really what it really boils down to. As long as you're having fun with what you do, then everything else will follow. All those other things will come along.
That very much mirrors what our CEO and founder Andy Alsop says. He says it's F at the beginning for a reason. Yeah. If I'm not having fun, I don't want to do it. So Peter, exactly. Thank you so much for the conversation. We went to some places that I didn't even expect, but I'm glad we did. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, sir.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was fun.
Thank you so much for tuning in and watching this episode of The Fabric. If you want more content from our studio here in Denver, Colorado, please consider subscribing to our channel here on YouTube. That's youtube.com/thereceptionistapp to see more of our content coming out of this space that you see behind me, as well as more content from the remarkable guests and the rest of the team here at The Receptionist that we plan to highlight and show you much more of. Join us in the comments. We'd love to start interacting with you there. Please join us and we'll see you on the next episode.
The Fabric is hosted by me, Michael Ashford, Director of Marketing here at The Receptionist, and it's produced by our creative manager, James Jordan. If you'd like to give The Receptionist for iPad Visitor Management System a try in your office, jump over to thereceptionist.com/freetrial and give us a test drive for 14 days with no credit card required. See what you think. And until next time, take care.